Hi, Matthew. Welcome to episode 104 of the Performance Advantage podcast, where we bring sports science to the people with myself, Dr. Will O'Connor, and Dr. Matt Miller, aka MTB PhD. Matt and I are both sports scientists, active competitors in endurance sports, and sports science researchers and coaches within the field of, endurance sports, Matt, outdoor activities.
Come on, man. We talked about this. Mountain bikers don't like to be called endurance athletes.
I know.
Especially gravity riders. I don't know even what to say.
Yeah.
We do cover a pretty broad spectrum, but together what we did is we created, what's the Training Peaks course called? Introduction to Exercise Science for Endurance Coaches?
For endurance coaches.
Yeah. So, to be fair, we define endurance actually very broadly. So you might not think of yourself as an endurance athlete, but we would probably think of you as an endurance athlete.
That's right. You are an athlete.
An endurance athlete. Yeah, but not without the endurance. Yeah.
All right. So your watch or your Garmin unit has training zones on it. And especially the Garmin one is so annoying. It says zone 3 is aerobic. But we all know, upload to Strava. There it is, and it's the zones are all there. You know you should use them, and you kind of have an idea, but actually utilizing training zones in your training and even for your racing and in your post analysis can be so effective to maximizing your training and implementing optimized racing strategies and pacing strategies so that you can smash your PB, nail your course records, whatever it is. Training zones can get you there really effectively.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they're for. We did a whole episode on training zones called Training Zones, Science, Simplicity, and Effectiveness. And it's still one of our best performing episodes ever. And that was 2 years ago. So we're looking back, I wonder if some of what we think has changed in 2 years. You know how that happens.
Yeah,
we learn more as we go.
We also discussed a large amount around threshold there as well. I think it might have even been threshold in training zones, that episode. So this one, we want to really talk about the implementation of training zones and, some of our opinions, thoughts, implementation, strategies have changed, especially with the release of my running power training zone system, which we can, which we'll get into.
Yeah, cool. Hey, Will, just a question for you. Training zones. We talk about what we want to do is bring sports science to the people. Are training zones a science?
Oh.
What's your opinion? Use a bro science opinion to give me what you think about science.
I was listening to this podcast with one of the original founders of Apple. And he said, we had two forms of decision-making, opinion-based decisions and data-based decisions. And both are equally important in developing new and innovative products. And one can't be ignored. And so I think it's a crossover. It's like a Venn diagram of the two, where I think they're not science, because 89% is not nothing is that accurate in the human biology. Out in the environment, you're out on the trails, Matt, and it could be 40 degrees or it could be 10 degrees and raining. And so now 90% and 88%, they could be interchangeably doing exactly the same thing, but one's going to be zone 3 and one's going to be zone 2, depending on what zone system you're using. But they are based off science, right? Mm-hmm. They do have fundamental scientific basis to, yes.
Yeah, so you're saying it is really difficult to generalize. That's exactly what training zones are doing, is generalizing between everyone. And the main benefit of training zones, which we should mention straight out the gate, is that it just makes it easy to talk about intensity. You base it off of this marker, which you can test and retest, and it's set at this percentage. So then as a coach or an athlete, you can easily communicate. You're right, though, that things are not as accurate as they need. They don't need to be that accurate all the time. One of the things I did on Facebook is I joined the Stride community. I think that's what it's called, right? Stride training community or something?
Yeah, or coaches community. There's a couple, but yeah.
There are a lot of people in there. And Stride, which is the first running power meter, I joined it because we are going to have to create a similar group for Break Ace, where people ask questions and there's a community to support the growth of the product. So I was like, all right, let me check this out. And one of the things Stride does is it automatically calculates your critical power, which we'll talk about in a second. But there are so many people on there complaining about the accuracy of it. Like my predicted pace or whatever was off by 6 seconds. It's like, well, you know, it doesn't need to be that accurate, right? We're talking at roundabouts area, just to give you an idea of what to go with. And training zones are exactly the same way. They're not exact. Set it, stick to it, and that you're on your way to at least getting started with your training zones.
Yeah, just speaking on that Stride one, you know, what they do is they calculate your critical power. So we'll touch on this and then we'll get into like, how can you establish your training zones? And it's going to be through your threshold or critical power or whatever, anaerobic red line. And what they do there is, yeah, that's awesome, but they take like definitive points along your critical power curve. So like peak 1 minute, peak 2 minute, and let's just say 10 minute, 20 minute, right? Well, Matt, like you're training for an ultra marathon. You don't do any peak 1 minute or 2 minute or 5 minute efforts. You know, you might be doing a lot of tempo stuff, some maybe low end threshold hills or, and then like some really long runs. So like your curve gets really shallow and then like, but your actual capacity to, if you did want to go do some 1 minute efforts is still huge. You don't lose that. But now it looks like, you know, if I had a 10K and then they go to the next step and predict your times, right? So they're like, well, the critical power is this and you actually have no anaerobic capacity. So we're going to say that you can do a 10K at 95% your critical power. And you're like, you know, mine was like 37 minutes or something and I did 33. it's like, that's outrageous. Like if I'd gone out and listened, you know, to them blindly, which people are doing because they are doing, like they don't have the background knowledge. They haven't done our course or listen to our previous podcasts. And so they're thinking, well, this is, you know, I don't know enough. These guys are the experts. So this is what I'll listen to. They get on and then they go on Facebook. They go, what's happening here? And then 20 people comment, Stride shit. You shouldn't listen to them. And then one person comments, oh, it's because you probably haven't done like 1 or 2 minute efforts, and they get drowned out. And then here we are.
And then the echo chamber continues on Facebook. It is a little bit dangerous with when you are searching for like really specific scientific kind of an answer for really complicated question. And then you listen to people's opinions who maybe also aren't as educated as they could be on the topic. I see this in a lot of times when I look at forums. This is just maybe a bit of an anecdote, but I think it's important to remember. When I look at a forum on a topic that I really understand, I see a lot of very wrong things. But when I look, right, like if I look at something about sports science, I'm like, that's actually not true. That's taken out of context, all this stuff. But when I'm looking at a forum of something that I don't understand, I'm like, wow, that's a good point. And that's also a good point. So it's really easy for myself then to create this wrong idea of something that I don't completely understand just because I'm listening to these forums. There are a lot of valuable things in there sometimes, but you got to be careful when we're talking about things really specific, like, well, training zones.
That's right. So this episode is going to be helping you decipher your threshold and prescribe yourself some training zones and implementing them into your training for maximum effectiveness. So here we go. Matt, I'm coming to you. I'm like, Matt, I want to do the Walker 100 cross-country 100-kilometer mountain bike race. I've got a power meter on my bike, obviously.
Yes.
I've got a heart rate monitor.
Do you have a Break Ace?
I've pre-ordered
Yes, good. Okay. All right, we're on the right track. You can see me now, yes?
All right, so I've filled out the questionnaire. I told you all the stuff using Strava. You've checked out some of my data. I want training from you. How are you going to talk to me? I'm like new, total newbie. Like I've been using Strava. I've seen that there's some training zones on there. Some of my mates talk about zone 2 rides and like zone 4 effort. I have no idea. Like I know they're there. So what do you got for me?
Okay. Well, generally my process is this. You go on my website and you fill out the pre-training questionnaire. And that gives me an idea of where you're at. Usually what we can do then is I usually don't look at Strava. It's too difficult for me to look at as someone who's analyzing data. The tools aren't powerful enough. But what you can do then is you can sync all your rides, runs, every exercise that you've recorded, sync it to Training Peaks, then link me as a coach to your Training Peaks and I can have a look. So I have some really powerful tools that I use to be able to understand kind of where you're at with your fitness and how intense your rides are. It's a really important part. But always, 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 the first thing that we do when we start a training plan or a training program is we test to find out what your maximal aerobic ability is. So it's like a really general way to say a threshold. And we need a threshold. There's a zillion out there, a zillion. And they're all very like minute differences. But what we're trying to find is how you're the highest level that you can exercise without basically blowing up, right? That's what we're trying to find. So you can measure it in 100 different ways. And then once we have that, we can look back and see how intense relative to your threshold every exercise is that you've done, and then go ahead and build your following workouts based on that.
Okay. So I'm pretty new. I didn't really follow any of that. Do I have to do a test?
Yes, you do. And they are hard. They're hard. So that's why I was really interested in this threshold thing. This is what I did my undergraduate research on and my master's research on, was these different thresholds. One is FTP. So for cyclists, it's a way for us to use our power meter to go out and determine what our threshold is. And then I researched critical power, which is very, very similar again. But with FTP, there's a few ways that we can measure it. One way, which is really, really painful, is you go out and you go as hard as you can for 1 hour. 1 hour, that's a long time.
Yeah.
But what if we do 1 hour, we can basically assume that that is around about your lactate threshold, approximately.
Yeah. Right? We've so got to, if you do a 1 hour effort, and this is across, running, this is across swimming, this is across kind of any endurance, or like, I'm going to keep calling it endurance sport. Sorry.
Go ahead. Yeah, we did. We clarified that at the start. That's okay. They should still listen anyway.
Endurance sport. We're going to that's going to be your anaerobic threshold. We're going to be able to use that pretty reliably to say, but I don't want to do that, Matt.
Oh, good. No one does.
No one is going to, like, some people, time trialists, you know, Ironman athletes, they may want to do a 1 hour all out. They may. No one wants to run for 60 minutes as hard as they can.
Well,
if I saw that on my plan, I'd be like,
It's the logistics of it is just too hard, especially on a bike, because if you suddenly go, you're like, all right, sweet, I need to go really hard, so I'm going to go up a climb. Do you have a 1 hour climb near you, or are you going to have to go back down the hill and try again? It's going to mess with your average. And like to do a threshold test, you need to be really motivated because you need to give it your best, because we're going to set all your training zones based on this. So 1 hour, I've done it a few times with a few athletes and I don't do that anymore. So, okay, well then what are we going to do? Generally we have this 20 minute test where we do a 20 minutes as hard as we can, and we multiply that average power by 0.95. We can use that to set FTP, or we can use an 8 minute test, which, since it's nice to use a hill, there are a lot of 8 minute long hills out there. We multiply that average power by 0.9. It, in a way, and I say this, and you can pick this apart as much as you want, I've had a few DMs about this and a few people ask me, you can use the 8-minute one relatively reliably if it's something that you can do repeatedly. That's the most important thing. You can repeat it, but there's a pretty large component of anaerobic work going on there. So it's maybe not the best. 20 minute, yeah, pretty good. The important thing is, and this is what we said in our original training zones episode, when you are setting zones, you use the same zones every time and you use the same test every time. And that's the most important thing.
Yeah. So for running, yeah, the 20 minute is a great ballpark, like number. And so what I do instead of 20 minutes is 5Ks. And I also...
Is this the Will O'Connor method?
I haven't settled on a name, whether it's like Dr. Will's 1 in 5 or like the Willow test, but...
The Steve zone. You can name it whatever you want, actually, since it's yours.
It's mine. So it's a 1K all out and a 5K all out, done about 3 days apart, definitely within the same week. Right. And so from that, I can test both like anaerobic capacity and aerobic capacity to determine your threshold. And that's, most people are pretty keen to do a 5K. Like, oh, I'm keen to see where I'm at. And then a 1K, that's easy. Like that's, so for most people, that's going to be around 4, 4.5 minutes. And most of the time, like it's going to be less than 5 minutes. So it is a really good kind of VO2 max anaerobic peak. Like, and then for other people, it's going to be like less than 3 minutes as well. So it's, but it's all right. So there's that for running power. I see you smirking. What are you smirking about?
I'm just thinking about like all the haters that are like, no, no, 4 minutes is anaerobic or 4 minutes is aerobic.
Yeah. Cause two right? minutes is peak anaerobic, whatever. Okay. So
it's funny, but like, this is why this discussion is important to have, right? Because the important thing is that this is how you do it and that you can do it the same way next time. That's the important thing. It's not important whether you're, if you really want to test anaerobic power, you're doing plyometrics, right?
Well, or if you wanted to get the most accurate determination of your anaerobic capacity or your threshold, you do like 1 minute, 2 minute, 3 minute, 4 minute, like max efforts across like 10 days.
Yeah.
So you can draw the whole curve. No one. So, but then I also have the 30 minute test. Now that's a lot, and that is a lot to run. But actually, I'm looking to determine, like you say, you got to go all out. I don't see that as the necessity. I see that like to determine heart rate thresholds and pace thresholds as opposed to power. I see a 30 minute best, like not all out TT, but like best effort on that day where you're pacing it. The first 15 minutes is challenging, but not hard. And then you're pushing, you're going to get a relative average that is going, like, if you went 95% effort, you know, so like you're training, right? And you've got a 30 minute best effort on your plan. It's not like an all out 10K race. It's not an all out effort, but it's for what you got on that day, pace it well. The difference between what you're going to be able to do, like, on absolute maximal all out is maybe 5 seconds per K, you know, and across 4.5 minutes to 4 minutes, 35, it's nothing. And in terms of heart rate, I will be able to, there will be no difference in heart rate. The only thing that's going to differentiate is you hit not 190 at the end for the last 30 seconds. Maybe you'd hit 193, but actually taking the average 20 minute of that 30 minute, that will give you your heart rate threshold, one that we can use reproducibly.
Yeah. I think we need, so when we talk about going all out, we're not talking about going all out as you would traditionally think that, but we talk about pacing a lot. So when you do a 30 minute test or a 20 minute test or an 8 minute test, you're not starting with a maximal sprint ever. You're starting at a pace that you can generally maintain. For that
In my plans, I've removed TT and I've removed all out and put best effort. The only all out reference I have is for the 1K, because you can go all out.
Yeah.
For 1K. And so Yeah, because and when you're using like with the with running power and heart rate, like your actual result is not that relevant. Like it's the number we're looking for. Like day to day, what's the realistic average number that you can get across 20 minutes that we can use to multiply by 0.95 to get this like threshold number? Okay, cool. We've got that. And then another means, Matt, that I use when, especially if I'm onboarding someone for like, and we're doing like a consultant plan. So they're just coming in, they're like, oh, look, I need to get set up for this ultra in 3 months or this marathon or whatever. I'll just look back at their past races. So like generally there's a 10K or a half marathon and I'll just take peak 20, 30 minute heart rate from that. Or peak 20 minute pace or something and utilize that. So rather than having to do a specific test, you guys out there, if you're using Training Peaks, you can actually just use your past data and you don't have to specifically go out and figure out how to, you know, do these tests, although they would help. It's there's information there already.
Yeah, generally I think it's a good thing to do to start though, when you first start your training, because it is your marker, right? So if you're going off of a best performance from like 3 months ago, so much can change in 3 months. And it's really good, I think, when you start a training program to at least write off the possibility that you are overtrained. Because if you're about to start an intensive training program, you don't want to be overtrained. So if you do the test, that's a good way to figure it out. Because if you're like, all right, I'm coming off the couch, I'm going to ride hard for 3 months and then I'm going to start training, which I think a lot of people generally do. It's like preparing yourself for a training program.
Yeah.
There's a chance in there to maybe go too hard. That's why I do still always like starting each training program with a test, just to make sure, right? And,
yeah.
And to see where you're at. So you can use old performances if you're pretty confident that you're not deep in a hole already. And there are a lot of planes flying over us at the moment.
they get Will filtered out. There's a noise filter.
Okay, that's good. Will and I live pretty close, so you can hear the plane crossing both of our houses. Sounds like
that's a helicopter. Hovering. But so with the like using past performances, I use that like to get set up right before you have the opportunity to do a test or something.
Well, because you can in a way predict how that test will go as well.
Yeah.
So that's totally good. So you say here's your pace or here's your powers. Try this and then go harder at the end if you can maintain it. I saw that you sent me this link to your website where you have these training zones on your website. And then you also have a calculator as well. You have 7 zones here.
Yeah.
Tell me about.
So before we get into zones,
yeah,
can we just recap how to test, Matt? Bike. What do you do?
Do an 8-minute FTP test and multiply your average power during that 8-minute TT by 0.9. And that is the number to use for your FTP. If you want to do something more complicated, you can do that. Stick with the 8 minutes because you'll at least be able to repeat it.
Yeah. For running, I recommend if you're not using running power, do a 30 minute best effort. Just go out and go give it to yourself for 30 minutes. And then take the average pace and average heart rate for the last 20 minutes. Use that as your threshold. And then for running power, use my 1 kilometer and 5 kilometer test, and then just go on my website, drwillo'connor.com. It's right there. And we'll link to it in the description, and use the calculator. And so you do 1K all out, give it 3 days, and then do 5Ks best effort. And the time for the 5K doesn't really matter because we're looking at power. So you can get more efficient later on in your training, but it's the power number. Put that in, and then now, Matt, we go into zones.
Okay. So I'm looking at your site, and I see these 7 zones. That's a lot of zones, man. Tell me why. Tell me why you got 7 zones.
Okay. So 1 is less than 75% of your threshold.
Zone 1. This is like easy running is what it says.
Yep. So The reason I have seven zones, Matt, is due to the way I prescribe training. And this is why training zones are all, there's a lot of them, you know, a lot of different systems and they're different, is because each coach, scientist, what facilitator, whatever, has their own means of determining like a training intensity and the system in which they implement their methodology of training, right? And so we'll get into that. But for me, these seven zones represent the athletes I predominantly work with, the runners I predominantly work with, and a means to prescribe training to them. So zone one, we've got easy running, less than 75%. And that is actually easy, right? So below a point, a lot of people, so that means that zone two then is 76 to 87% of your threshold. Now for zone two, a lot of the time is 80 to like, between like 80 and 90%, somewhere in there. But what I've found is that when you're running, especially running, when you want to run, I work with ultra marathoners, you run for 3 hours, 4 hours, five, six, you're still in zone two. But actually, like, because of the associated fatigue and the fact that you're generally wearing a pack and stuff, you'll be at the very lower end of what other people would have predominantly considered zone one, which they say easy or recovery. It's like running for 4 hours is not easy in any way you skin it, you know?
True. Yeah.
So my lower end of zone two. So that's zone two, right? And I can prescribe that. You can go all the way up to the top. And traditionally, that's going to be your maximal fat oxidation rate zone. So your maximal aerobic zone.
Do you mean by that? Clarify what you mean.
So that's the point at which you can maximally utilize fat for a fuel source. So to generate ATP for muscular contractions. Because fat is rate limited in its breakdown, when you start exercising harder or increasing your intensity, the rate of muscular contractions increases, the work rate increases, your power increases. Fat as a fuel source isn't able to maintain the energy supply to sustain that work rate. So you need to use carbohydrate.
Okay. So we're talking zone one is maximal fat.
Zone two.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So that's 76 to 87% of your
threshold critical power.
Based on Dr. Will O'Connor's method.
Yeah.
What do you think then? So that goes to 87%. If I suddenly find myself at 88%, is my season ruined? Hey, just want to let you know that if you're really enjoying what you're hearing today, Will and I offer some sports science courses that count towards CEUs on Training Peaks University. So we have fundamentals of running with a power meter, fundamentals of mountain biking with a power meter, an introduction to exercise science for endurance coaches, and that's part of your level 2 certification for Training Peaks. So check those out on trainingpeaks.com, or you can also check out performanceadvantagepodcast.com, where you can get CEUs for USA Triathlon in those same courses.
No, but this is the nuance of it, right? Like, what's the prescription?
Well, if you prescribe to me 30 minutes, well, it says 30 minutes to multiple hours. So let's say you prescribe to me 2 hours at zone two. And I find that going up a hill, for example, I'm running at 88% of my threshold.
Yeah. So now you're in zone three. Yeah.
Yeah. So is there something wrong with that? Is that okay? What do you think?
There's something wrong with that.
Okay.
Right. So the upper end of the zones are exactly that. Like, they are designed or targeted to be the average transitioning point between those definitive work rates. So I reference zone three as lactate turn point one. So the first point at which lactate begins to accumulate. So it's still steady state, but your contribution of carbohydrates is increasing. So now you're just targeting a slightly different energy system and a slightly different fuel source, a slightly larger muscle mass and slightly less efficient muscle mass because, you know, you're working harder. You're trying to run up this hill hard. And so when you're especially doing something like 2 hours, when it's a zone two hours, the goal is to be, you know, conversational pace, increase sustained stimulus of that maximal fat oxidation rate. So when you start to draw in carbohydrates and you potentially start to increase your rate of fatigue, now at 90 minutes, because you've sat right at 88, you know, 87, 88, like you're right on that cusp. You're like, well, if this is zone two, the very top is the most efficient, you know, that's going to get me the most effectiveness. Well, potentially you accumulated so much fatigue that by the time you've got 90 minutes of this 2 hour aerobic run, you've actually really fatigued yourself. And now you're not achieving the goal of the workout. You're just building fatigue, which is going to follow on into your subsequent, you might not notice it next week because you're not thrashing yourself, but you are, you're then like, yeah, a couple weeks later, you're like, this is really tiring. Mm-hmm. And you get into that episode where we talked about dispelling the gray zone myth, but that gray zone. That's gray zone.
Yeah.
You have a prescribed intensity with an ultimate physiological goal. And you're just kind of thinking that more is better, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you find yourself, you're like, whoa, 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 whoa. I don't want to find myself digging a hole. So what I'm going to do then is when I get zone two prescribed, I'm going to run at 76% because that's the lower limit.
Yeah,
I'm going to run bang at 76%. So let's say my threshold is 250 times 0.76. Oops, my calculator. So 190. If I run just at 190, I never go above it. Sometimes maybe below it. What do you think about that as my zone two run?
That's good. That's good because you got to think about in the overall scheme, and this is why these zones work in the implementation of my overall training philosophy, that zone two is your bread and butter. It's not the targeted exercises or workouts that are going to draw you to your maximal performance across a marathon, across any kind of distance. Like they will get you to your maximal aerobic capacity. They build the base, but from there, where I'm given you some sessions, some workouts that are optimally prescribed to get you ready for race day. So if you're trying to like throw in an extra 3%, like I don't really care, you know. Where I would care is if it happened consistently, your heart rate's at like 60% of your threshold. You're like, oh, okay, you're just really, really fit. We need to reset your zones, right? But otherwise, yeah, just being able to exercise somewhere in that zone. Because the other thing is, I don't know where you're at with your fatigue. I don't know if you went bouncing on the trampoline for 2 hours or like, you know, bow hunting in the woods.
Or drove. Or driving. Or, yeah. You'd be fatigued. You'd be very fatigued.
I would.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I did. So you may have just skipped, you know, whatever. You're busy yesterday. You didn't do yesterday's workout. And then you're a bit sick in the weekend or also busy, so you didn't do like one of your big workouts, you could be at 88% for a couple of hours and actually heart rate super low and you just feel like you're cruising. That's cool too. But then also you could have done all of those sessions and be a bit under the weather. And so there's no point chasing 88. 76 is fine. Even lower is okay as well.
Yeah, I think so. Because generally what I prescribe is zone one to two.
One to endurance, two, same. Yeah.
Endurance ride.
Yeah.
Just because like sometimes you might coast, sometimes you might slow down a little bit. But the idea is that this is a way for us to track it and make sure you don't go too hard. Well, that's really the main thing, because the goal of this zone 1 to 2 effort is to oxidize fat and train your ability to
maximal aerobic, like just continuously build like a low dose of stimulus of fitness, mitochondrial biodensity, easy recovery, low acidity, low stress, sustained low stress. So then with zone 3, about 88% to 94%. And this is what I see as like tempo and marathon. So what we can do in running is we have these like really fixed, everything's really fixed race distance points, right?
Oh, so, yeah, you guys are so lucky. You're like, well, I'm going to run 5Ks.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Well, I know how long that takes.
There's no drafting. Like the drafting effect is so minimal. Like it's not like you're in a bunch, you know, and you don't have a 7-day stage race. You're not doing an enduro where you're like riding sometimes, waiting, smashing a downhill. It's not a cross-country mountain bike race where you got to kind of start a bit harder and there's climbs and descents. It's like you are running 42.2, 21.1, 10, 15, whatever it is. So, okay, based off of like all the historical data, we know that this is the intensity you're going to be able to do that at.
Yeah. And then as we go up, I don't think we should rattle off like every single training zone, because you have a pretty detailed article here and it's all pretty well described in your training plans as well. But they go up generally pretty quickly then. We're zone 4, you're looking at like threshold-ish, but then you go up to zone 7, which is 116%.
So these zones pretty much replicate what I see in the race distances across the last 5 years of working with Running Power and the athletes I've worked with.
Oh, cool.
Okay, so zone 3 is like marathon. Zone 4, just sub-threshold, is half marathon. Zone 5, just above threshold, so 101 to 105%. And then I actually should be 106%. Zone 6, 106 to 115 is like 5K, 3K. And you can see, so Matt, I've gone 5% pretty much, right? 88 to 94, 95 to 100, 101 to 106, and then 107 to 115. Now this zone 6 replicates the mass differentiation I see in people's anaerobic capacities. So like when I say zone 6 to someone who's just focusing on 5K, 10K track running, they can get up there and do like 115%. I want to give someone some like, you know, that Paul Lawson's high intensity interval training, some HIIT workouts, and I want them to go hard for 1 minute. Someone who's doing an ultra marathon, I just want them to speed up. I don't really care that I don't care where you are there. I'm just like, here's your power number. You do need to actually go hard. So it's not just like threshold. Like you do need to push. So here's your bottom limit. But then like, yeah, someone who's building up for an ultra, they're not going to be able to do a 5K at 115%. But also as you start going longer, like these durations start making a big difference. Like I'm doing 5K at 15 minutes. You're doing 5K at 23 minutes.
Bro, no. Now that I have my alpha flies, we're sub 20.
We actually, someone hit me up. We'll do the follow-up episode for your 5K training plan.
Yeah, well, I think I actually need that training plan in my training
piece. Our lives kind of got a bit hectic, so we will implement that off show.
I've been running, though. Running. Yeah, I did Hard Hills Tuesday. I was swinging off the back.
You told
hard.
Me.
It was hard. I'm telling everyone else.
So, yeah. And then up to zone 7, which is just the reason I have 7 zones, Matt, is that reason, right? So you got 1, 2, differentiating between like easy and steady, right? And then we have 3, marathon, 4, half marathon, 5, 10K, 6, VO2 max, like 5K and below, kind of, you know, like it differentiates all those kind of intervals. You got long steady intervals in zone 3, you've got threshold based intervals in zone 4, then you've got kind of super threshold intervals or like that kind of high intensity speed based, and then you got like VO2 max intervals, and you can change those based on the duration, but we're looking like sub 10 minute stuff. And then for zone 7, it's you're going hard, who cares? right? Like if I'm saying doing hill sprints, again, people's capacity to actually sprint for 30 seconds is so different. Now you could have a 20-year-old guy who was a team sports like football player, and then you could have a 60-year-old woman who's just like wanting to do her first 50K ultra. Like one's going to be at like 200% for 30 seconds. The other one's like probably, you know, hasn't done plyometric based exercises for 10 years. It's like, well, zone seven, hard. Like I don't even say zone seven, hard, you know, like
they're hard. I don't either. It's nice to though, but remember the point of the training zones is that we have this common ground for reference of how hard actually is it. So if we can make those delineations, that's an easy way to talk
about
that.
And then what we can do, Matt, is for something like that seven, and why I've established seven, I think in the last episode a couple of years ago, I was all about five, is that I can retroactively analyze the session as well, which is now super important with power. And now the fact that I have so many more athletes with power, especially with Coros and Polar introducing it into their watches, is that I can say, look, during your 10K, how many times you entered into zone seven.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So the cumulative time, because it just in Training Peaks, it adds up cumulative time. So it's like across the 30 minutes or 25 minutes of your 5K, you spent 2 minutes in zone seven, and that 2 minutes was in the first 2K.
Yeah.
Like, so you're essentially doing like, you know, hard out sprint, like based efforts on these little undulations. And that's so.
Not
so I didn't need it to prescribe anything. I needed it to kind of like
analyze.
That's
good. That's good to know.
But before for pace, Matt, because before I was using running power like as broadly as I am now, your pace wouldn't differentiate, right? So you just needed to know, oh, you were in zone five, like that's way too hard. Like, but actually over these undulations, your pace doesn't change. And into these headwind sections and, you know, and these uphills, you generally are trying to hold pace. So we didn't, and your heart rate would kind of stay the same as well, because you're, you know, especially in these short 5Ks or something. So you didn't actually get this idea of like, well, look at all these massive spikes. And so that's why I was kind of using five, whereas now I've got my seven.
All right. That's cool. I think before we lose all our cyclists, we should quickly hit on some cycling power zones. I use Andy Coggan training zones. When you log into Training PC, it has a zillion options. Like, how do you want to set it? Okay, based on threshold, based on something else. I can't even remember what all the options are because I always use the same one just because then I can compare the same thing. It's comparing apples to apples, and that is numero
uno. You can consistently talk as well.
Yeah.
Like whether someone's just buying a training plan off the shelf or someone's like, you're doing a podcast, you're doing a video, like you can just keep talking the same system.
Yeah, it is difficult though. Sometimes when I work with a new athlete or someone buys a training plan, they can set their own training zones. When I build a workout, I base that on a percent of a threshold or something like that. So there can be maybe a way to where some of that gets lost in translation, or it takes a while to kind of get used to the new terminology. For example, I started working with a new athlete and her training zones were just different. Like zone three was much higher than the zone three that I would generally prescribe and things like that. So it's then about trying to at least just get on the same page for when we're prescribing workout. But it's Andy Coggan zones. If I scroll down in this article, there's also seven zones. And I usually just cut it down to five or six. I think last time we talked about this episode, I did five. And I was like, well, actually, five ends at 120% based on this calculator. And you can definitely go harder than 120%. So,
So, Matt, when we're looking at cycling, we have some triathletes and, or just like, I had plenty of runners I work with ride their bike too and are on Zwift.
Do they?
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. You know. That's cool. That's good.
They're really low. Like, so.
They're really low what?
Percentages. Right. So zone three is 75 to 89%. That's my zone two on my on my zone system.
Yeah.
So how do you implement your zones? Because like 55% to 74% for zone two, like that's cruising.
It is cruising. Yeah, it is. Because if you look at heart rate and the heart rate that equates to, generally, it doesn't always because everyone's heart rate's different, but it's you're looking at 69 to 83%. I never thought about why that would be different.
Well, I guess from my understanding is like the durations.
Yeah, that's
like
what I was
no one's running for 5 hours. Well, I mean, we are, but like not at the steady rate that someone can ride.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and if you get on the bike and you're like, all right, I'm going to ride at 90% of my threshold. What are you going to, you're going to do that for 5 hours? Cause that's what your endurance zone is for, right? You use that for multiple hours. You're not. I can tell you, you are not. And if you are, and that's your endurance ride, that is way too hard because that's what we're doing with elite athletes and that's their tempo. And for them to do that pace for 3 hours is hard.
Yeah. Really, it's also hard. The work, like, because power is means of this, the rate of doing work. You do a lot of work running.
Yeah.
Compared to cycling, you don't have wheels and a seat holding you up.
Yeah. And generally, like, especially if you're outside, like, you get these micro recoveries when you coast. Mm-hmm. It's amazing how much coasting happens, even when you're trying not to coast.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah. You get that outside as well. But yeah, so endurance goes up to 75%, tempo goes up to 90. Threshold is obviously bouncing just under or just over your actual threshold that you've set from your test. And it goes up to VO2 max and then above that anaerobic capacity.
Yeah. Well, part of the difference in these zones, if someone is confused, like, oh, they're you know, zone four, 90 to 100%. And like, or, you know, we just discussed mine being like 5%. Differences, and this is like a 15% window from 90% to 104, is that cyclists and mountain bikers train for, well, one, they can recover on the descent. So is that, so if we, you know, you're targeting a climb, but the ability to work hard for such, for these like really long durations, I guess, like everything's really fixed within running. Like I said, you kind of you're maximally working for a marathon when you're running like 3.5 hours less. When you start to get up to 4 hours, you know, we're probably pushing back towards upper end aerobic capacity. But so then it's like, well, you're just not going more than 30 minutes or like for a 10K, you know, like 45 minutes is kind of like that peak point. So we all just work references based off of like these kind of like average durations for a distance. Whereas cycling is so much more variable. You would do like zone four efforts as like 5 minute, 10 minute, maybe a 20 minute, like all within like the same climb or something like that, or within the same workout, where in running, you're just steady state all the time. Like you're time trialing. There's no point in trying to attack and then freewheel. So it's far easier to prescribe like these really small zones.
I see. Yeah. It's really difficult actually to compare cycling to running. We should do an episode on that once I have had a chance to think more about it.
It's in our course.
Oh, right.
In the Running Power course that's just released on Training Peaks.
Yeah.
Or aren't available on our website.
Yes, cool. Okay, I don't actually remember talking about that, but that's normal. Yes. Okay, so I'm also have this other link open, Joe Friel's guide to setting zones. I see you can use this to set running and then also cycling as well in that article that you sent me. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that's what I use for pace.
Okay. Okay.
Heart rate is Joe Friel's. Annoyingly for me, he has zone four and then he has 5A, 5B, 5C.
Maybe a nice way to say it. I remember that in the Mountain Biker's Training Bible, which my dog ate, and I still read it. It's not a good excuse. My dog ate it. Instead of having up to seven,
why?
A, B, and C. Well, I think the five just represents that it is anaerobic, right? Definitely anaerobic. And then, well, how anaerobic do you want to be? Like a seven is way different than a five, but a 5C is not crazy different than a 5A, maybe.
Well, if you want to get super intense, Steve Palladino, I don't honestly, there's like 14 zones.
Really?
System. So he has like the basic five or seven. I have to refresh, but he's got like zone one's ABC because you've got zone one as easy running. And you have zone, or and the zone one as, yeah, like easy running like I do. So it's all under 75%. But then you have zone one A, which is actually recovery from an interval.
Okay.
Right? So like nothing, right? Like a walk or passive. And then you have zone one B, which is like, a jog or like a kind of an active recovery from an interval. And you have zone one C, which is actually an easy run.
Yes.
And then he breaks up a lot of those because even within zone three and four, depending on your fitness level, if you're running like a 2.5 hour half marathon and then someone's running a 1 hour half marathon and I'm saying zone four is half marathon, it's not. Because that same 1 hour person is going to be doing their marathon in 2.5 hours, same time. Like, so, yeah.
This is where some of the internet haters get caught up, right? It's like, yeah, there are these differences if it takes longer, the huge differences.
Well, and this is where I preface like my zones based off of my demographic and the people who typically I work with, follow me and follow my work. Sit within this realm of capacity. And this is what I see across the last, you know, half decade of working with these people. If someone's only working with quote unquote back of the packers, they're going to see just a very different physiological profile than me. And if they're back of the packers who are predominantly ultra marathoners who are running on trail, that's very different than a track athlete who varies between track and road, just like you, Matt, mountain biking. You know all the nuances of mountain biking. You know they don't directly translate to all the road stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, based on Steve Palladino's extra zones, one ABC, I actually can see the merit in that.
Oh, like, totally.
Because sometimes I'll say easy endurance, which is like lower zone two, or, you know, zone high zone one to low zone two, or I think we call it long fast distance, which is higher zone two. We do sometimes do that, but I think the new, like the practicality of actually being able to stay within a very, very fine window is just almost impossible. Like, I'm pretty good at pacing, and I went for my run yesterday, easy run. I was like, sometimes I was like down at 150 watts. Sometimes I was at 190 watts, and it felt like my heart rate was crazy steady. Right. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, I didn't even realize it went down so much. So if I was trying to stay within like 171.5 watts and 192, I feel like I missed the mark every time, because I would for a lot of the time.
Yeah. You just if you're not on a treadmill, it's same if you're not on the Zwift, like whatever your smart trainer. If you're mountain biking versus smart trainer, there's no way. There's no way you can stay in like 30 watt zones, you know?
Yeah, that's why I really like these smaller zones. Sticking with five-ish zones is a really good way to do it, I think.
And so, yeah, I'd love to work with that. And then, as you know, Matt, like you've said, oh, fast, easy, and fast, like fast, all that stuff. That's when you work with someone one-on-one, you start to establish, I guess, the higher level of language, right? But at, I don't want to say basic level, but fundamental level, when you're trying to talk to people who are just grabbing your plan off the shelf, reading one of your blogs, or getting something that you've listening to our other podcasts, you just want to be able to say, look, this is what it is, and go from there. And so if we go into the implementation side of things, Matt, we kind of discussed how each zone, what it represents, especially for my stuff, like how are you using them?
How am I using the zones?
Yeah. So we know like zone one and two. Cool. What can we use? 3, 4, 5.
Okay. Well, basically the higher you get in the zones, the less time you can maintain that. Right. Just generally, that is exactly what happens. So what you can do is in something like zone three, you can really start to extend the rate that you're burning carbohydrates and also some fat, generating lactate and converting the lactate into energy. You can really do that at a high rate when you're exercising at zone three. And you can do it for a pretty long time because you don't totally get destroyed. And you can do it maybe a few times, well, at least once a week, right? Threshold. If you start riding at threshold, your zone four, that's more intense and it's doing more damage. You're creating a lot of acidity, generating a lot of lactate. And it's the highest rate that you can continue to convert lactate into fuel. That's good thing to do, but you don't want to do it all the time because it's pretty hard. And when we're talking zone five, we're doing a lot of muscular damage. So you can only maintain that for a short period of time. Generally, the longest zone five kind of workout I'd prescribe would be a 5-minute effort, sets of 5-minute efforts, which for cycling, we can do that. And that would be about it. Anything above that, we're saying all out kind of thing. We're talking zone six or very hard.
Is the one that's going to be most effective?
No, it depends who you are, right? It depends who you are, where you're at, what you're trying to improve. I got to say though, like this zone three, I think in the last episode, when we talked about the gray zone, at least try to debunk the zone three tempo kind of haters, because zone three is super powerful. You can maintain that for a very long time. If you went and you went on Zwift today and you tried to ride bang on the middle of zone three for as long as you can, you're going to find that you're going to get tired pretty soon. So what we do is we generally train that level up and athletes start to notice pretty big differences.
Yep.
I just gave away all my secrets.
I think depending on like where a runner is at, between 3 and 4, I've noticed huge gains in fitness. So that's when a runner is listening to the actual zone, right? And that was part of the gray zone myth of like, what is gray zone training? It's like, Matt, when I say, like you said, if you try and lock in middle of zone three on a treadmill or on a trainer, it's fixed first 10 minutes and be like, this is like, this is only just faster than some of my zone two stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And you're like, and then you're like, oh, okay. I want to do not this, you know, like I want to speed up or I want to slow down. I want to like, this is getting, and then your heart rate's like, you see it like going up and you're getting hotter and you're like, okay, this sucks. Like this is crap. And it happens pretty quickly for some people. But the idea is like, I like to do, 10 minute efforts or like five or six minute efforts. Like, and you do a lot of them because you can, because in 10 minutes, you're like, that was like just, you know, and then you do another and you're like, okay. And you just see the stepwise approach of their heart rate going up. But what you're able to do is actually get essentially on 10 minute efforts, like really effective high dose aerobic stimulus, because you don't allow it to go to the extent that you're going to generate lactate. And then later on, you can bang out some of those like 10K tempos, 1 hour tempos without, you like really fatiguing.
Yeah.
And you get huge muscle recruitment, stimulus, stress, and adaptation to that. But then like on the flip side, like you have to be down in zone 1, 2 for your other stuff.
Yeah, that's the hard part, I guess.
Like, so that's what the biggest difference I notice is when we start to, you know, work with a run and they do this, like some zone three, some zone four stuff specifically, and they lock in the zone. They're not, you know, they're not doing like that thing where you're like feeling good, punched out the last two intervals, like real, like way above the prescribed, you know, that's not this session.
It happens a lot.
I start to see this like quite big bandwidth of like, this is easy. and this is steady.
Yeah.
You know, this is tempo. This is like fast. Whereas when you start out, if you've been training without some structure, or you're like, you know, you've just been smashing it with the boys, getting on with the girls on the Zwift and whatever, you end up gray zoning it. And so there's no real, some days you're feeling good and your aerobic runs are like zone three. And then some days you're feeling a bit crap and your zone three is like the top of zone two. It's like, and that's why adding training zones and adding this definitive structure, and like the question at the top of the show, Matt, about like, is 88% bad? That's where you got to say yes. You got it. Cause in the large picture.
Yeah. Cool. That's cool. I think we brought it full circle there.
I think we did.
Nice way to wrap that up, Will.
Yep. Thank you.
So will you put links in the description, or am I writing description this time? Generally, that's what's been happening. I can add these links since I have them up in the description, and you can check them out. Check out your calculator. And I also have some MTB Power Zone calculator on my website. You can check that out as well. Kind of runs you through how to do it. So check those out. Set your zones, stick with it, and see what happens.
We're always available to chat about this stuff. Check us out on Instagram at Dr. Will O'Connor and at MTB_PhD. And be sure to leave us a review. Helps out, helps the reach. Have a good one.